feeling like my life is going nowhere and that I've got nothing to live for.
I did attempt to take my life.
If you don't feel you have anyone to talk to or turn to, that's why we're there.
This is Heads Up.
Hey, it's Cliffo and Gabby, and welcome to Heads Up, along with our entire lineup, Morning's announcer Carly and Arvo's announcer Maddie. We've connected with a wide range of guests to hear their experiences with mental illness. You'll also hear advice from professionals.
This program does contain sensitive content, and we do recommend parents listen with their young children and monitor the content if they feel it's becoming too much.
And we do recommend that you utilise the services available if the content is particularly upsetting for you.
Lifeline is available 24/7 on 13 11 14 and the Kids Helpline is 1800 55 1800 or there's available online chats through their respective websites.
The 2021 beneficiary for Hit the Hill is Be Kind Townsville, founded by a lady named Amy Simmons.
The charity aims to improve the mental health of locals through school programs, their mental health truck project, and more. Learn more about Be Kind with Amy now.
I started it after I experienced my own issues with mental health, and after seeking help I thought, you know what, I should probably give back to those who helped me throughout those times, and then it kind of just blew up and eventuated from there.
Wow.
Because when it first started you were doing fundraisers and giving money to other charities here in Townsville, and it kind of snowballed into becoming its own charity. So how does that work now?
Yeah, so we still give back to other charities when we can,
yep.
But now it's more so based around getting those funds to us so that we can create more modernised new projects that are, you know, potentially that other charities aren't doing.
Okay, so at the core of it, if someone donates to Hit the Hill or they donate directly to you guys to Be Kind, what is that money used for?
So that goes towards our school programs as well as our free transport support. So we do free transport support for those who have either been a victim of crime having their cars stolen, or it goes to them needing to get to medical appointments, their therapists, GPs, anything like that where we can try and help, you know, people who don't have that kind of accessibility.
It's Townsville-based, the money?
Yep, all Townsville-based.
Spent so in Townsville, that's
all
great.
All kept locally.
Talk us through the school programs, because it is so important to talk about mental health with kids from such a young age. So what do the school programs actually entail?
Yeah, so we go out there and we do some fun activities where it just gets them to get energised and be active and engaged in the programs. And it also covers the topics of not only mental health and symptoms and how to help a friend, but also we speak about what to do at parties and how to look after their mates out there, because as we all know, when we were young, if you say no, we're going to do it.
And we all know as well, so mental health doesn't discriminate. It can be young people or older people as well. How does Be Kind assist people who are like us in this room? We're not kids anymore.
I don't believe it. No, so we usually do a lot of community-based projects as well. So we're looking at putting together a program next year where it can be yoga-based or it'll just be going for a walk and having those mental health talks along the way. And, yeah, so that's pretty much where we're expanding.
Fantastic. So money well spent, staying in the local community. What's your connection to Hit the Hill and why are you excited to be part of this event?
This is so exciting. I've been part of Hit the Hill just as a participant ever since it started, and I've absolutely loved it. And then, you know, it's very close to my heart having lost 5 friends to suicide as well as myself experiencing a suicide attempt. So it's something that's really, really important to me and really, yeah, it means a lot.
As a person who's been through their own mental health journey and you work with people who are, you know, going through mental ill health, what would you say is one of the most common misperceptions or, you know, one of the common things we have to, I guess, stamp out and get over this hill sort of that we, excuse the metaphor, that we're trying to climb and, I guess, come out the other side? What do you think we need to be, you know, thinking about?
I think we still constantly need to be able to have that awareness out there. But still there's so much stigma that people aren't really comfortable to talk about it, and we need to, I guess, expand that. So I'm really hoping that with this event we can do that so that people are more comfortable to remember those we've lost, but to also, you know that there is help out there.
And that's such an important part of Hit the Hill, is starting those conversations so that mental health is something that everyone feels they can talk about. Even just talking about Hit the Hill starts that conversation about their own mental health and wellness. So we're so happy to have you on board, and we're so happy that the donations are going to be staying here locally in Townsville.
Amy Simmons from Be Kind, thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you guys.
This is Heads Up.
Kat Pegoraro is very special to our Hit 103.1 team. She's a former colleague and a dear friend. In our 2019 Heads Up doco, Kat revealed her mental health struggles, including the recovery process after attempting to take her life.
They were saying these terms, depression, anxiety. You've got chronic depression. We're going to give you this medication. And I just didn't understand, mm-hmm. I think. And I think I waited too long to really, like, I was at breaking point. I had just had enough. I did attempt to take my life.
Listening back to that, that was you reflecting on your lowest point 2 years ago. How do you feel about it all now?
It's very emotional to reflect back. I think because when you are in the healing process, I suppose, when you do reflect back, it can be a bit like, oh, I made that. I made it through that. So it's very beneficial, but it's very emotional as well, looking back.
Do you still feel like you're in that healing process?
I think you'll always be. I don't think that you get a diagnosis or you're feeling depressed or anxious or whatever you're feeling, and then you're fine once you've gone to therapy or you've taken some medication. I don't think it works like that. I think it's a daily, ongoing commitment to your mental health, and that's exactly what it is for me.
To even look back and listen back to that, though, you've obviously come such a long way. What's your mental health feeling like today, right now?
Today? Good. Like, today, I'm a bit tired. It's been a busy week, but today I got up and I exercised, which I do every morning. I'm feeling good. I don't have depressive thoughts at the moment. Have anxious times, but right now I'm feeling good. But I do know that it's fluid and those feelings will come and go.
What do you think's been the biggest learning experience for you in the last couple of years?
Acceptance of myself, I think. You know, I spent 10 years of my life not wanting to live and not wanting to be here. But I've spent the last two living and thriving and wanting to be here. So it's an adjustment, but I'm really proud of myself.
I can just see it on your face, the glow and the shine and the way you speak. It's really lovely. And I think it's nice to have worked with you 2 years ago and now you're back again. And I've seen that change in you, and you're actually working in the mental health space now, which is so exciting.
Yes.
That must feel so rewarding for you to have come from that low point to now you're helping other people get through that.
It is. It's so rewarding. I'm working for a mental health organisation, Selectability. So I work with carers. So I make sure carers that are supporting people with mental health conditions, that they feel supported.
That's nice. I think we're always healing and we're always going through that journey. When you do have those low days, what are some of the things, the practical things that you do to kind of lift yourself out of that mood?
Yeah. So I'm very routine based, and that's something I've learned about myself. So every day I wake up and I exercise. So that could be just a walk, just, you know, even if I'm feeling tired, it could just be a walk around the block. It's just about moving my body. Practically, I also take medication. I have a very good support network now.
Yeah.
That there's people that are in my close-knit network that I can link in with and speak to. In myself, I write. I write how I'm feeling, whether that be typing or journaling. So those are things that work for me, and they're not things that I discovered overnight. But when I am feeling flat or anxious or starting to feel depressed, I know exactly what I have to do to make it through the other side again.
I think for me, the last 3 months or so, I've been going to the gym, and I regret to inform you that exercise, it does in fact work.
It does, yeah. Doesn't it?
It's so annoying.
It's so annoying. I hate those people on Instagram. You're like, exercise makes you feel better. And you're like, oh, it does. It yeah. does make you feel better.
Absolutely. And mindful eating as well, I've been really trying to take on board. So I think it's a combination of everything that you spoke about. It's really, you know, having a good support system and also exercise, it just really does wonders for the mind.
It does. And I think also what I found was reaching out for support and reaching out for help from medical professionals and from like people in my personal life, the first time you do it is the hardest because you're like, oh, I have to tell my story. And I don't even know what my story is. Like it couldn't, you feel like you're rambling and you feel like your feelings don't even make sense to you. So how are they going to make sense to someone else? So that is like the first hurdle. But each time after that, it's a little bit easier and a little bit easier.
And I mean, the reason we do this thing called Hit the Hill is so we can open up these conversations. And I know for a fact that this conversation we're having right now is going to be helping somebody. And I'm very proud of you. Kat Pegoraro, thank you so much.
Thanks, Maddie.
We reference the Lifeline number often on Townsville's Hit 103.1. The crisis support workers are available anytime on 13 11 14. But what's it actually like to have those life-saving conversations? Renee Erickson, the service leader in Townsville for Lifeline Crisis Support and Suicide Prevention, takes us behind the scenes. What happens once someone calls 13 11 14?
They are greeted by a wonderful, caring, compassionate person ready to listen and respond to whatever your circumstances might be. They're there to listen to you.
What is perhaps the most common call that comes through? Obviously, people are in all different types of distress, but is there a common call that comes through?
I think the common theme or common thread would be transitions, changes, significant life changes that people didn't see coming that they're struggling with. Another big one is loneliness, and it's now being recognised as, you know, a significant issue that if you don't feel you have anyone to talk to or turn to, that's why we're there. Since COVID, with every lockdown, they are becoming peak times. So natural disasters are another one that we experience increased call volume. And currently we're experiencing greater call volumes than ever before.
How did it go, now that you just mentioned the natural disasters there, Renee, around our 2019 floods in Townsville? That was a crisis that people may still even be rebuilding their lives now. Did we see an increase in traffic around that time?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the calls we take in Townsville are from anywhere across Australia. So we don't get calls just from Townsville. We can get calls across Australia. But definitely during that flood event, there were many areas in Australia experiencing flooding events. And we did see an increase in calls around that. Not just from people in Townsville, but people observing what was happening and being affected. We had bushfires happening in different areas at the same time, so there was a lot happening.
That would be so much for those people taking the calls to be processing. What sort of training, I guess, goes into those people who are directly answering the calls?
Absolutely. We have a wonderful training program. We train here locally in Townsville, actually, so I would really love people to get in touch if they're interested in doing that sort of thing. So the training program is nationally recognised training. We have developed this program specifically for Lifeline based on scientifically proven ways to respond, counselling methodologies, but also based on the feedback of our help seekers who call. So it's been a very thoughtfully developed program.
Renee, what's perhaps one of the most surprising calls or just a call that has maybe stuck with you?
Yeah, I think a call that really stuck with me was a call that began as someone having thoughts around suicide and struggling with multiple issues in their life and really questioning whether they wanted to continue. We had a great connection during that call and a really good conversation where he was able to really freely express what was going on for him and
we got to a point in the chat where he was actually starting to feel a lot better and a lot more hopeful about his circumstances. And then something really unusual happened. So this man was calling me. He was sitting in the bush. He'd gone for a drive and he was sitting in the bush near a body of water. And as we were, you know, starting to wrap up the call, he started shouting and I wasn't sure what was happening. He wasn't talking to anymore. There was a commotion, something was happening. And when he came back on the phone, he said that a snake had just slithered across his foot.
Oh, my goodness.
And he panicked, of course, and freaked out. But the profound response to that experience was he was saying, you know, 20 minutes ago, had that snake crawled across my foot, I might have just let it bite me.
Yeah.
But because of the chat that we had and the place that he'd got to where he was now seeing hope, he chose life. And he moved away from that snake and decided, I really do want to live.
How does that feel to play that role in someone's life?
It's an absolute privilege, and I don't say that lightly. You build connections with people in a very short amount of time. You sit with them in their pain and their distress and you hear them and you really connect with them, and that is often what's missing. And when someone feels heard, the clouds kind of dissipate for them. You know, they're able to see perhaps a little bit more clearly some of the solutions that were right in front of them that just didn't seem within reach. So just having someone there to listen and to respond and really connect with the emotions that they're expressing makes a huge difference. And it's a privilege for the crisis supporters to make those connections and to make a difference and to be able to respond to those people and feel like you're making a difference.
Yeah, and you certainly are. Renee, you're making a difference to other people's lives. Are you making sure you're taking care of yourself at the same time? How do you check in with your own mental health?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely a huge part of what we do. Self-reflection is a big part of it, being aware of when you need to take a break. And what works best for you. Personally, I like to go home to my loved ones and hold them tight. We like to go for walks and, yeah, it's just about reconnecting with what gives you meaning.
Mental health matters at every age.
Georgina Manning has shed a light on why mindfulness in our children is so important.
How many kids out there are suffering with mental ill health in 2021? Is this a widespread problem?
Yeah, look, I don't know the exact number, but we do know that it has, you know, really increased. We know, like, particularly I'm based in Melbourne, we know that there's been an increase in children and teens, you know, presenting to hospitals here for mental health issues. And over the board, there is an increase in anxiety, but I can't give the exact numbers, sorry.
That's all right, but it is definitely a growing issue. So how important is it for kids to learn about mindfulness, and from what age are we talking?
So we can, well, two things. So one, why is it important? It's so important that our children learn to be present and to be able to self-regulate as well. So as they get older, the little kids tend to become less mindful. So they're mindful when they're little, as you probably know. And then as they get older, we sort of learn to become unmindful, and we're living in a very distracted world, and particularly, you know, because of technology. But kids can learn to be mindful, you know, like from a young age. We can teach them some of the strategies. So we can teach them from even 3 and 4 to sort of stop and take a deep breath and calm themselves down. And as they get older, we can get a bit more complex sort of in the skills that we teach them, like being able to notice their thoughts and they're managing their feelings and so on. But I think the earlier the better. So, you know, we do see it being taught in preschools, which is fantastic. You know, all the way up. So all the way up to, you know, 18-year-olds and then, you know, adults, obviously.
My daughter started meditation time in her preschooling years, and then, you know, that continued on into prep and primary school, and I love it so much. And you have a very, very recognisable face on board for Mindfulness Month. How did you get Peppa Pig involved? This is incredible.
No, it's gorgeous, isn't it, Peppa Pig doing mindfulness? Well, I'm working just with the campaign for this month with Peppa Pig and Save the Children. So it's really around, you know, October's Mental Health Awareness Month. So it's about getting that message out there for the kids early and when they're young, and also parents as well. So it's about both of them recognising and starting to bring it in part of their daily lives. It's exciting to have Peppa Pig learn mindfulness. I love it.
Well, so Peppa's learning mindfulness along with the kids. That's how she's involved.
That's exactly right.
Wow. I was imagining her doing like one of those meditations where she talks you through what to envision.
No. She's not the one for that.
No, that's right.
So fantastic. I think it's so important for children to learn the skills of mindfulness. Its effects on mental health are just so so proven and so evident and just so wonderful.
Yeah.
So check out more, peppersmindfulnessmonth.com.au, peppersmindfulnessmonth.com.au. Right now, child psychotherapist Georgina Manning, it's great to have you on. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on. Have a great day.
4 years into his North Queensland Toyota Cowboys career, Antonio Winterstein lost his brother Francis. He was just 20. Antonio, along with his wife Brooke, are now strong advocates for mental health in our community. This is their story.
Francis was a very social and outgoing young man. He wasn't quiet like I am. He was a complete opposite. But he had dreams and ambitions, and he was a proud uncle as well, and a brother and a sister who did have goals, and you know, reasons as to why he made those decisions is a question that not only us as a family ask ourselves every day, but it's a question that everyone that had connections with Francis, continue to ask themselves as well. So, and that's the greatness of raising awareness, is because it's not a isolated experience. There's many of families experience this, and it's an opportunity to connect with them also to be aware that we're not the only family going through these types of situations.
Were there any signs that maybe he was struggling? Was there anything going on that could have been a flag?
There was no signs that he was going through some difficulties at that stage. And myself personally, I wasn't, thinking back now, I probably wasn't aware of some of the signs, but attending mental health sessions and prevention sessions, I could see some of those signs thinking back at it. Yeah.
This was 2015. You managed to win with the Cowboys. You managed to win the grand final that year. How did you manage your emotions for the remainder of that season?
Personally, I think football in the NRL was a distraction for me, which is why I thank the game for being supportive of my family and myself during that time. Going through to the NRL or the grand final was just a joy to bring some happiness back into my family, because we were going through a very difficult time. So to see the smiles on their faces, during that period was definitely rewarding for me.
And Brooke, what was it like to be supporting Antonio through that?
It was hard seeing someone you love and your whole family, going through that. Myself at the time, I was pregnant with our third daughter. So for me, that was kind of keeping me stable. I knew I had a big job on my hands, keeping things normal for our other two daughters at home, also keeping things as balanced as I could for Antonio and, his career and the way that the team was going that year. So it was, I guess, like Antonio said, it was a distraction. I personally didn't really get to do much grieving at that time because, it was my role and my responsibility that I guess I gave to myself, that I had to hold down the fort and keep everything, going for everybody else.
And speaking about your gorgeous girls, you're now parents to four beautiful girls. Do you speak about mental health with them?
We definitely do, probably in more of a sense of just, being aware of their feelings and, talking about stuff, and that they can always come to us no matter what, big or small, because, kids are very, monkey see, monkey do. So if they see us doing it or if they hear us talking about it, they're going to do it as well. But I think as parents, you've got to be mindful that you've got to listen to their little emotions or their little stories, because if you kind of are too busy to listen to the little things, they're not going to come to you for the big things as well. So, yeah, just probably being mindful of things like that when you are a parent. But yeah, and just making it very normal that, you know, everybody has bad days or bad emotions, and that it's not something to be ashamed of, and, you know, just to always talk to us no matter what.
I love that. It's so important to be having those conversations at home. And you pair have both been big supporters of Hit the Hill. We've seen you on the Hill many times. We want to thank you for that. Antonio, do you think we're making really good progress in this space? Do you think people are more willing now to talk about mental health? Are we getting more educated?
Yeah, definitely. And it just exposes those, you know, the people that are going through difficult times, to connect them with services. It's definitely a starting point to bring everyone together, that's for sure. And, you know, people get to connect with each other and share their stories and experiences. So we're definitely making some strides there.
And how do the pair of you practice mindfulness for yourselves? How do you check in on your own mental health?
Well, I go to the gym. So that's my coping mechanism. When I do feel like I have had a rough day at work and at home, I try and take some time to go and sweat it out at the gym, which works for me. And Brooke's probably a bit different with her coping strategies, but we do support each other through those times.
And Brooke, what do you do?
Probably just being aware that, like, you know, if things are going a little bit tough or if I'm a little bit frazzled with whatever it might be, that it's just a moment. Mm. It's not the whole world. Like, it's not going to be that way for a long time. So just trying to take some deep breaths and just getting through what I can that day. I don't have to complete everything all in the one day. Trying to go for a walk when I can or listening to a podcast. It is hard for parents or even non-parents in this crazy busy world that we live in. But I think just remembering that, it's just, I don't know, it will be okay, whatever you might be going through and however overwhelming it might be. You've just got to be aware of how you're feeling and let yourself go through it. Try not to brush it aside and, you know, just get yourself through it by whatever your little steps might be.
Definitely. That's so well said. And Antonio, I just want to wrap up by maybe asking some advice from you. In these last few years, we've seen you very active in the community as a mental health advocate. What would you say now to anybody who feels like they might be in a hard place? What would be your words to them?
Oh, definitely find someone that you feel comfortable speaking to. And if it's not someone within your circle, that's fine. Throughout my challenges, especially the early stages with losing our younger brother, talking to someone that wasn't familiar with what was going on during that time was, you know, that was far beyond what I thought would help. So, you know, taking those steps to speak to someone that wasn't involved within what we were going through, definitely, you know, it did take a lot of stress off my shoulders. So definitely connecting with people, whether it is loved ones or someone outside their circle, it does help.
Kevin Humphreys is an ex-army officer, rescue helicopter pilot and mental health ambassador. He kept his post-traumatic stress disorder, depression and anxiety buried deep. But now Kevin has turned himself around and is helping the lives of others. We pick up our chat with Kevin the moment he realised he'd hit rock bottom.
When I was at home on a Monday morning, laying some pavers, and nothing I was doing was working, and the more I tried, the worse job I did, the more I told myself how bad a job I was doing, the weaker I got. And so the cycle started until it got to the point where I told myself to end it. Mm. And but as I went to, I collapsed. I couldn't do it. And thankfully my wife was home, and she came and found a convulsing, incoherent, sobbing man on the floor. And when she asked if I wanted her to call for help, all I could do was rock and shake a little bit more to indicate yes, because I couldn't actually talk. And after that point, then it was a roller coaster for all of us until I eventually learned how to ride the roller coaster and get myself better.
How did you move forward from that moment?
I don't know what stage it was, but I had a phrase that came to me, my mind got me into this, my mind will get me out of it. And I started saying that to myself again and again and again. I remembered a TV show from when I was a teenager called The $6 Million Man. He was an astronaut, should have died in a horrific accident, but they rebuilt him with bionic technology, as it was known in the day. And the motto was, we have the technology, we can rebuild him, make him better, faster, stronger than before. And so I put my head on his body in my mind and would say that to myself again and again and again. I have the technology, I can rebuild. Me. I'm going to make me better, faster, stronger than I was before. I'm going to rebuild my brain and say it to myself again and again and again. And after 9 months, I eventually got back to work and I got back to flying and everything else, which was just magic. The thing that stayed with me though, even though I got functional again, was a deep, deep-seated shame and sense of failure for having, in inverted commas, allowed myself to have a mental illness and allowed myself to contemplate suicide. It was so deep that I actually asked my wife to keep it a secret so that this topic didn't ever, ever come up. And that stayed that way for what ended up being 7 years. We ended up realising that the secret we were keeping was actually keeping us. And that was a huge moment based on acceptance. It was the moment that quite literally set me free.
Unreal. And Kevin, obviously your story is one that now, you know, is potentially saving lives. You go out there and you do public speaking. You're talking to rooms of people. It would be hard to fathom how many lives you've now touched in such a positive way. So thank you so much for turning your story into now something that is definitely helping others. You're also a founder as well of work that is helping lives also. Tell me about how that works.
Yeah, so Cor Infinitus, that's Latin for infinite courage. On Anzac Day last year, I was here in Townsville on shift with the rescue helicopter. The day after Anzac Day, I was down at the cenotaph on the Strand reflecting on, you know, service life, those lives lost in service, those lives lost after service. A friend of mine who was also in the Chinook squadron with me as a pilot, both here in Australia and as well in Afghanistan, took his life in December 19. Steve Faisal, a Townsville local that many of you would know. As I was there at the cenotaph reflecting on my life, his life and others, I came across an A5 size funeral service booklet for a Private Bradley Carr, an infantry soldier. I didn't know him. I saw the dates and he took his life on Anzac Day the year prior. He was 34 when he took his life and I was 35 when I almost took mine. And that really hit me, that looking around, we've got all these beautiful memorials and cenotaph, but the best we could do for the families is to put some rocks on a funeral service booklet. And I thought that was just disgusting, that that's the best we could do. So I made it my mission to get a memorial put in there at the cenotaph. And for me, it's all about dignity and respect for the families and the loved ones that are left behind. So now there's memorials being put in place all around the country dedicated to those who've served and taken their own life.
Oh, I'm really glad that you've started that, Kevin. And you obviously did mention our ADF families here in Townsville. For members and their families, friends, any of their loved ones, what's a message you would like them to hear, especially if they are currently struggling?
You are not alone. Absolutely not alone. When I fell to my deepest point, I never knew anybody who had a mental illness. I didn't know anybody who had taken their own life first, and, you know, directly or indirectly. It just wasn't on my radar at all. So awareness really has to be the key. And so so that you realise that, no, it's actually a really, really common thing. Even though it feels like you are the only person to be experiencing these problems and that your problems are way worse than everybody else's, there are very, very common threads that run through all of our stories because of the fact that we all have a head and we all have a heart, and they can both ache and break in different ways, and therefore there's also lots of help available too.
You're right on the money there, Kevin. There are so many Townsville support services. There's a list at hit.com.au. Thank you for sharing your story with us for Hit the Hill. If people are wanting to find out more, kevinhumphreys.com.au. And I just want to finish on you mentioned Stephen Faisal earlier in the chat. You served together, created great memories, and when Stephen passed, one of his brothers, Kerry, actually penned a great poem, and we have permission from the family to share that. So we'd be really grateful if you could share that with everyone.
Pleasure and an honour. When the Black Dog Comes a-Calling by Kerry Faisal, in honour of Steve Faz Faisal. Wandering through life, there can be many highs and lows. We often find that speed humps will be with us where we go. But many times the bumpy roads will eventually even out. That is, unless you live your life with endless fear and doubt. Some people handle pressure by just talking to a friend. It helps them to relieve the pain, get on with life again. But when despair takes a hold of you and it seems your world is falling, it's at that time in your life when the black dog comes a-calling. The black dog is a mongrel breed that sinks its teeth in hard. He'll take you on a horror run and leave no calling card. You often think he's come to stay, impossible to shake, and he's always nipping at your mind if you're asleep or you're awake. To break his stubborn hold on you takes a lot of courage and strength. It takes the support of those you love, both family and friends. There's times you feel that nothing works, that nothing can be done, but look for help from those who know you're not the only one. Some people seem to go through life with very little stress. Others fight a constant battle. Their life can be a mess. The only thing that I can say to keep your world from falling is go and seek professional help before the black dog comes a-calling.
You've been listening to Heads Up. As always, Lifeline is available 24 hours, 7 days a week on 13 11 14, as well as the Kids Helpline on 1800 55 1800.
Or there's available online chats through their respective websites.